Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by ServPro. Cleaning, restoration, construction.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We're going to move pretty quick today. We've got so much to do, including Connor Riley from Athens here much earlier in the program than we would typically take a guess, just simply because Georgia spring practice begins today. We want to preview some of what you'll hear from Georgia players, Georgia coaches, Kirby Smart in particular, on the Dog Nation YouTube page later on today. So a lot of football here over the course of the next 24 hours in the next few weeks here around Dog Nation, all of this leading up to G-Day on April 13th, which we now know is going to stream on the SEC Network Plus there at 1 p.m. Let me begin, though, by talking about what I really would like to potentially see from Georgia practice, perhaps more so than anything else. And some of this will be like the whispers that you hear. Some of this will be the kind of circumstantial evidence that you see. But boy, I would love to see something emerge for Georgia during the next month or so that could become a big part of the playing personality of this team come the fall. And I thought that yesterday, our guest, John Stinchcomb, the great former Georgia All-American, I thought he really laid this out pretty well. We were talking about, you know, the need at defensive line and some of the stuff that you wanted to see there. And John had a phrase, a way of describing this that I thought probably, you know, put it into perspective exactly what Georgia needs to see on that side of the ball for the upcoming season, beginning here this spring. Let me let you hear John as a setup for our conversation here today.
This past year, I think we recognized we didn't have that marquee, real game changer that we've had in the past. There was no Jalen Carter on the roster. There wasn't a Jordan Davis. I think the players that could become that level were young and needed a year or two to develop. And we had solid play, but the expectation, and when you play at a high level, is that you have superior play. And at times it just wasn't present, especially in some of those bigger matchups. I think you watch the game against Alabama and say, what was one of the key areas that we weren't able to win individual matchups? And it was along our defensive line. I look forward to see the difference, that sophomore jump that you can expect from the bigger bodies. That's a huge transition going from high school competition into SEC level play.
So that's it right there. The absence of marquee game changers on defense, especially the defensive front, the way in which Georgia kind of defined itself in 2021 and then in 2022 with Jalen Carter. As John says, listen, it was solid for the most part, but not quite spectacular. And the overall statistics sort of pointed that being true. The fact that Georgia missed out on winning a national championship last year probably also suggests that's true there as well, that Georgia was good with its defensive line, perhaps not great. And as that unit goes, so goes the Georgia defense overall. So if I could see anything happen for Georgia here this spring, I think as a Georgia fan, the thing that I would wish for is evidence that a perhaps, once again, to use John's phrase here, a marquee game changer could emerge up front for Georgia defensively. Now, when John's speaking about that there, he's speaking a little bit about the Jordan Halls, the Christian Millers, or perhaps someone there on the defensive line becoming a little bit like what Jalen Carter would have been, or Jordan Davis, or Devontae Wyatt, perhaps would have been. Trayvon Walker, of course, there as well in 2021. But the point that I've also been making, and I've kind of been making this now for going on a year, is that, listen, that marquee game changer doesn't necessarily have to fit the mold of what Georgia's had in the past. It doesn't have to be Jalen Carter just because that guy in the past has been a defensive tackle. It could be someone coming off the outside edge. It could be a little bit of a position switch for a Mikael Williams, or the emergence, speaking of a sophomore who could step up that John referenced, you know, it could be like a Damon Wilson there as well, that this could be for Georgia a defense in 2024 that could define itself by its edge rush play, perhaps in a way that previous Georgia defenses kind of haven't done. I pose that as a follow-up to what John said, and this is what John said in response to all of that.
I think that's the one space that Georgia really hasn't had a presence that scares other teams. I think at times, especially late in the season, Jalen Walker emerged as one of our best pass rushers. And he's a guy that I think Georgia is just trying to figure out ways to get him on the field. He's so athletic. He can play inside. He can play outside and has proven to be an effective pass rusher. But we have not had that one player that offensive lines and tackles and coordinators are going, ooh, we need to, in past situations, we've got to account for this player.
Can you create that this spring? Now, we won't know for sure. It's going to take, 15, 16, 17, however many games is going to be this upcoming year. It's going to take that to prove that one way or the other. But do you see the evidence of that? Do you see remnants of that starting to form? Can it be a Mikael Williams? Can it be a Damon Wilson? Can Georgia create, as John said, the sort of outside edge player that strikes fear in the heart of opposing offenses because they've got to be watching that guy at all times and perhaps putting two blockers on that guy to prevent that guy from wreaking havoc? Can Georgia be that here this season? As I said before, if that's what Georgia does produce, the marquee game changer that scares opponents, it seems like a couple of the candidates who have a real chance to sort of step forward in that regard, one of those is Mikael Williams. We've talked a lot about Mikael over the course of the last few weeks, a guy that's played defensive end. Maybe he still plays that some here for Georgia here this year, but there's also the chance that the position switched outside linebacker, giving himself a chance to stand up and use speed coming off the edge a little bit more. Perhaps that's the kind of position fit for Mikael that gives you a little bit of a chance to see the sort of full blossoming of all the potential that he has. In fact, back in Miami, when Glenn Schumann spoke to reporters there about not just the end of the current Georgia season, but a look ahead of the next season, he talked a little bit about what Mikael perhaps brings to the table. I want to read to you what he said just because the audio in the room the day that he spoke, it was a little bit weird. Let me see if I can read this to you. On the idea of a position switch for Mikael Williams, Glenn Schumann just a few weeks ago, back at the beginning of the year, saying that Mikael's an edge player. I've mentioned this earlier. He's always cross-trained at other positions. Sometimes you say changing role, the things that you've cross-trained in terms of being able to play defensive end and a bigger outside linebacker, you decide that based on who's your best 11 on the field and what your opponent's doing. Glenn Schumann goes on to say, I know this, we'd like to play him on the edge more, whether that's a defensive end, jack, anything from that standpoint. And I love this last line from Glenn Schumann about Mikael Williams. He says, he's one of our best players, and we want to make sure that he's doing what he does best more often. That's what you want to hear. That's what you want to see. And if Georgia is going to create that marquee edge player for the upcoming year or marquee game changer on defense, the kind of player that strikes fear in the heart of opponents, I think that Mikael Williams is a really good candidate to be able to do that. And as John also referenced, guys like Jordan Hall could be that there too. I mentioned Damon Wilson. Maybe they're that themselves. And John said, hey, a year ago, these are players good enough to play, but perhaps not quite yet seasoned enough to be good enough to dominate. And if you want to go back a year ago at this time, Kirby Smart was sort of singing a similar message post-G-Day in 2023 about where Damon Wilson is and about where Jordan Hall is, that at the time, they were still really young. Well, when you look ahead to what the spring practice we're about to go through, they're not quite so young anymore. For some reference on this, let me let you hear Kirby Smart this time a year ago about those young players freshly entered into the Georgia program this time a year ago who are a little older now, Kirby on Jordan Hall and Damon Wilson just after G-Day.
Got a ways to go. They're not ready, but they know that, and they're working really hard at it. And the sooner they get ready, the better we're going to be, because we need both those guys to step up and play. So they're just young. I mean, it's like it's okay to be young, and they have a ways to go. And I think they'll get there. I think both those guys will contribute and help us next season. I'm very pleased with where they are and how hard they work, but they're not there yet.
They're not there yet, but that was a year ago. Are they there now? It's one of the things with this spring practice that's going to make it fascinating, whether it's Jordan Hall coming up the middle, Damon Wilson coming out the edge, Mikael Williams in a couple of different potential positions. John also mentioned Jalen Walker there too, who may be a candidate in this discussion. That Georgia needs a face of its defense in the front seven, the kind of way that Malachi Starks sort of occupied that on the back end. Who is the face of the front seven of this defense going to be? Who is the marquee game changer? Who's the guy that gets all of the attention? This spring is the start of the conversation to find out exactly who that is going to be. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by ServPro. We're so happy to have you with us as Georgia spring practice gets up and running here today, and so many fun things going on with all of that. And of course, Dog Nation all over that ourselves. Connor Riley's going to join us in a minute. He is there. Mike Griffith on hand for all that there, too. We got big time spring practice coverage coming for you over the course of the next few weeks. Of course, you'll see that every morning here at 10 a.m. across all video platforms. You'll listen to it on the radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 Ref, and the podcast. However you find them, people who tune in there in Apple, you know it drops for you right there around noon each and every day, by noon, certainly. And then Spotify, the podcast shows up. You click into that, you listen to it. You've been doing that for years. We certainly appreciate you continue to subscribe and being a part of what we do for Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro there on podcast. And speaking of ServPro, so grateful to have them as a part of our program here today, and so grateful for the great work they do for homeowners in our audience or people who have commercial property or you got rental property. Sometimes damage is just an unavoidable thing that happens when you've got a real estate property like this. Fire damage, water intrusion, something along those lines. Well, when any kind of time damage like that strikes your home, the cleanup and restoration specialist from ServPro will be there every step of the way to get you everything you need to get your property back looking like it never even happened. And that is what ServPro is all about. Every franchise independently owned and operated. And there's a reason why I always highlight that, because if you've got major damage to your home caused by fire or water or something like that, that is a very, very serious thing in your eyes. And it is an outcome that you are desperately seeking when it comes to all of that. Well, guess what? The folks at ServPro, because it's an independently owned and operated franchise, they're just as committed to a positive outcome as you are, because their livelihood depends on that, the same way that your livelihood or certainly your happiness may depend on a positive resolution to your situation. That's what ServPro is all about. Restoration specialists doing great work to get the damage around your home, whether it's caused by fire or water intrusion, whatever it might be, just cleaned up like it never even happened, looking just as good as new. That is what ServPro is all about. So find them online, servpro.com. That's S-E-R-V, servpro.com for more on that. All right, we're going to do things a little bit different here. We've actually got a really fun Around the Doghouse we're going to do in a few minutes that kind of looks at a follow-up to a story that we brought the other day, a prediction that's maybe coming true as it relates to the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll give you that here coming up in a moment. But for now, everything on Georgia spring practice as it gets rolling here today. Let's talk about all of that and a lot more with Connor Riley, Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Connor Riley going to be busy for Dog Nation today, covering Georgia players as they speak to the media in a few minutes. Georgia coach Kirby Smart a little bit later on after that. So we want to jump right into the conversation. Connor, we kick things off today by saying, I thought John Stinchcomb's words yesterday were so strong on this, the idea of a marquee game changer. 2021, Georgia had a bunch of them. 2022, Jalen Carter definitely counted as that. Perhaps other guys did as well. In 2023, you know, I would say that Malachi Starks is one of the best players in the country, but in that front seven, I don't know that you had the marquee game-changing player, the kind of player that, as John said, scares opponents. I don't know that Georgia necessarily had that as much as it could have in the front seven a year ago. And as a fan of this team, that would be kind of at the height of my wish list for what could possibly emerge here this spring. Do you think that Georgia has a chance to produce that with its front seven here this spring heading into the fall?
Spring is going to be tough to tell. They're going to have to get through, you know, this spring practice session with guys healthy. You know, Small Mundum was not healthy a season ago, and I think he's a guy that absolutely could have been a difference maker for Georgia. I think you look at the defensive line, bringing back Warren Brinson, Naz Stackhouse, I think is going to eat up more snaps, and that should allow guys like Christian Miller and Jordan Hall the ability to develop. How those guys play this spring, I think, is going to go a long way in determining if Georgia does in fact have that sort of overstimulated defensive game wrecker on that defensive line, something, as you and John have pointed out, they just really didn't have last season ago. And the numbers in terms of rush yards per attempt allowed really show up there.
You like to make predictions, so I'll give you a chance to make one. No matter who it is, could you see Georgia's leading sack man having over under 5.5 sacks here this year?
I would say over there. I mean, Jalen Walker had 5.5 a season ago. And so I think if they're going to look to try and get more opportunities to just try and get a guy like him on the field. Maybe you see Mykael Williams at that jack position and what that does moving forward for him and his game there. And then obviously I think a lot of eyes, not just on Damon Wilson, but Sam and Pemba there as well at the outside linebacker position. So, you know, if they're going to play 15, 16 games, I like the odds of taking the over there at 5.5.
You talked about the health a moment ago for Smile Amanda, and I would say of all the things that we'll hear today, that update from Kirby Smart on healthy players one way or another is probably going to be the most substantial piece of news that comes out of this. We've gotten very used to big-time Georgia players not participating in spring practice and going on to have, you know, in many cases, great seasons, even without, you know, being a full go here during spring. But the injury situation still matters. So let's kind of roll into that here for a moment. When Kirby talks about injuries today, I'm assuming it's still a pretty slow go for Branson Robinson. You know, tell me the rest of the overall injury picture for Georgia in terms of what you anticipate Kirby Smart saying, or perhaps players that you're the most curious about their status from an injury standpoint.
Yeah, Branson Robinson still working his way back from the patella tendon injury he suffered last August. He's not expected to be full go and won't be until fall. Bo Hewley, hometown of Atlanta, Georgia, working with sort of a shoulder injury there. I wouldn't expect much from him this spring. On the defensive side of the ball, I'm going to be interested in seeing just sort of what they do with Smile, because again, we talk about how unhealthy he was last season dealing with a foot injury. Ironically, he suffered in spring practice. I think that's a name to monitor there as well. Ra-Ra Thomas is someone I'm interested in getting an update on, just because he did have a very serious foot injury that kept him out of the stretch run last season. And so I think that's someone to watch there as well. But also, you know, we're going to hear some surprises today from Kirby Smart. He's been pretty quiet on the injury front in terms of the news that has come out in that regard. And so, you know, be braced for anything. And in the past, you know, if you're worried about a guy missing spring practice, the year before N'Kobe Dean won the Butkus Award, he did not go through spring practice. The year before Brock Bowers won his first Mackey Award, he did not go through spring practice. So big-time players have missed spring practice before, and it has had almost no impact on how they look in the fall.
I want to talk about some of the other stuff away from Kirby in a moment. Let me kind of keep on the theme of Kirby Smart here. You know, this is around that time of year when we start to see a little bit of an overarching message sometimes emerge for Georgia. And the last couple of years, that message has been related to downplaying winning a national championship. Remember, after the 2021 championship, moving to the 2022 season, Smart during spring was very adamant about championships aren't defended, or, you know, whatever phrasing he was sort of using then. You know, last year you would have had the same type of thing about fighting complacency because the team had won two in a row. Well, now for the first time since, I guess, the 2021 spring, this is a team that sort of shows back up to work with the notion of unfinished business. What kind of message do you expect to hear from Kirby Smart? I joked yesterday on the show about how there's so much big talk coming out of, like, say, Ohio State right now. Obviously, I don't expect Georgia to be talking about, you know, being unstoppable or legendary or whatever nonsense that Ohio State sort of speaking. But what kind of message do you expect to hear come out of Georgia here right now, just knowing that it's a little bit different kind of spring than either of the last two have sort of been?
Yeah, I think Kirby's going to be thrilled to not be answering questions about having to go out and repeat and, you know, sort of have a hungry team once again where, you know, they do have to go out and prove it and win a national championship. There are 28 new guys on this roster in terms of scholarship players. And so because of that newness, you know, be it, you know, recruits or transfers coming into the program, I think he's got to sell, you know, Georgia getting up to speed and moving things quickly here, as you have so many new players sort of learning the ways and the ins and outs of this Georgia program. I think 60 of the 89 scholarship players on the roster right now are in either their first or second year with the program. That's just so much newness and not a real, you know, full bank of institutional knowledge. So I think it's going to be really important to monitor how Georgia gets up to speed and how quickly they're able to do it, given how much newness and how many new faces they have on this team this spring.
Well, speaking of newness, there's also a lot of newness around college football there as well. And at the Orange Bowl post-game press conference, Kirby really volunteered a lot of opinion about what he thinks the current state of the sport is and how unhappy he was about the, I guess, the way the bowl situation was sort of playing out with all the opt-outs that Florida State had. I think that sets up a situation where a lot of reporters today could feel very empowered to ask him about, you know, change of the college football playoff or change of the revenue model or changes to this. Like, how much of that do you think happens today? I think most fans just sort of want to talk about this team and right now. But given the fact that Kirby has proven willing to talk about larger issues in college football, do you think he's pressed on much of that today?
I'd be surprised, you know, maybe a few national media types come in and ask these questions. I'll note, you know, with with Nick Saban out of the game, with Jim Harbaugh off in the NFL, I think, you know, Kirby takes on sort of a bigger voice in this sport. And I think there are going to be a lot of people, as you point out, sort of looking to him, you know, sort of like Ryan Gosling at the Oscars, sort of waiting and seeing what he's going to say on certain things. And so whether it be NIL, transfer portal, schedule, New York SEC, I think those are all sort of things that people may want to hear. But I think today at the start of spring practice, he's going to be pretty squarely focused on this team and what it brings to the table and where he wants to go from there.
I would say that this team is a lot different than most Kirby teams at Georgia, and the fact that I sort of feel it's more quarterback-led than typical Georgia teams have been. Even in 2022, when Georgia returned a starting quarterback who had led them to a national championship, I believe that Beck's status right now is more cemented than Stetson Bennett's would have been coming into the 2022 season. How different do you expect spring practice to feel then, knowing that you've got a firmly entrenched starter? Almost every national media outlet's called him the best returning quarterback in college football. Do you think that creates a different vibe around spring practice because he's kind of sort of in the status that he's in?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to sort of see what we see from Carson Beck this spring. I think just given the fact that you've got, you know, a guy that played really well at the end of last season and obviously has some areas where he can build off of as well. So I'm going to be interested in how he goes about improving on things. And we heard Kirby Smart talk so much in the latter part of last season about how he goes about sort of becoming a better leader for Carson. And so, you know, with Brock Bowers gone, with Cedric Van Praan gone, I think that's an area moving forward where they're going to be really, really interested in seeing, you know, how does his voice grow this spring? Obviously he's super talented and has a lot of high expectations with that. So I'm going to be really, really interested in seeing how sort of things go about improving there for Georgia.
Let me finish with this topic here. You know, you look at the offensive side of the ball for a moment. I think replacing Brock Bowers is fascinating from the standpoint of we don't expect any one person to do it. It's not going to be Oscar Delp's job. It's not going to be Ben Urosek's job. I think it's a multitude of whether it be more slot receivers in the field, whether it be more from the running game, a guy like Trevor Etienne. Like, statistically speaking, and I know this conversation probably begins today, how do you expect Georgia to go about the business of not replacing Bowers the individual, but replacing the productivity that he was responsible for?
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, they're going to have to make up for it in the aggregate. It's sort of the money ball thing. You know, the A's had to go about replacing Jason Giambi and his 130 RBIs, 35 home runs, 120 runs. I think moving forward for Georgia, they're going to have to find a way, you know, how do they replace what Brock did so well last season, working the middle of the field and picking up those chunk plays, you know, churning his legs and getting an extra 3, 4, 5 yards per carry. So I think how Georgia, it's not going to be one guy. They've told us before it's not going to be one guy when he missed time last season. So, you know, I think you look at that wide receiver position. What do we see out of newcomers like Colby Young and London Humphreys? Obviously, Oscar Delp is the name I know. I think Lawson Lucky is an important name to follow this spring, given Ben Urosek moving on. Or Ben Urosek not coming into the program until this summer. What do we see out of Trevor Etienne, and how does he help this passing game with his ability to catch passes out of the backfield? I think all those things sort of matter. It's not just going to be one guy. It's going to be a collection of guys. You're going to hear good things about a lot of guys this spring at that wide receiver and tight end position.
I'll tell you one more comparison I'll make, too, is look at when Tyke Smith came to the program as a transfer. A lot of fanfare, but initially just didn't quite work out, whether it be because maybe Georgia wasn't sure what it had in him, maybe it be because Tyke also battled some injury. But by last year, Tyke Smith was a very important player of this Georgia defense. Now he's in a pretty good position, I think, to be drafted much higher than most of us perhaps thought that he would be. I'd make the comparison a little bit to guys like Ra-Ra Thomas and Dominic Lovett, who, in Ra-Ra's case, you know, a little bit banged up, also came from a very different kind of offense, and now he's a year sort of extra later into the Georgia offense. Dominic Lovett, a guy that, you know, had big numbers in his final year at Missouri, first year at Georgia, you know, a little bit quieter than I expected him to be. But, you know, some of these guys that could, as transfers, sort of really have their moment sort of a year later than expected, a little bit like Tyke Smith, kind of took a while to figure things out, but eventually became a very valuable part of the Georgia story. I think that Ra-Ra and Lovett could potentially travel a similar path for this Georgia offense here this season.
Yeah, I think with Ra-Ra, again, the big thing, as Terrence touched on last week, is just how healthy is he? Because we've obviously seen the talent and what he's able to do from an athleticism standpoint. You think to that big catch he had against Kentucky last year, I think that's going to be impressive for him moving forward. With Dominic, I'm going to be interested in sort of the way Georgia goes about using him. I think, you know, you saw Ladd McConkey move around a lot last year. You know, some thought he would be a slot guy. They actually played a good bit outside as well. I wonder if Georgia maybe tries and does something similar with Dominic Lovett this spring in terms of going out there and moving guys around. Because you have Dylan Bell, who's sort of a multi-positional athlete there. And obviously how he develops this spring at wide receiver is important. But those two guys in particular, especially when you look at the transfer wide receivers they brought in, Colby Young only has 1 year of eligibility at Georgia. Michael Jackson III only has 1 year of eligibility at Georgia. Those guys are going to have to start really, really fast. And as you saw last year, Ross Thomas had a disastrous spring. And while Dominic Lovett had a good one and actually finished second on the team in receptions and receiving yards, I don't think he exploded in the way some fans thought he might. Mm-hmm. So how those guys go about this spring is going to be really, really important for this Georgia offense.
Connor, it's going to be a busy day for you. We'll look forward to seeing one of those videos on the Dog Nation YouTube page. Of course, reading plenty of stories there at dognation.com. We appreciate your coverage. And thanks for being on that wall for us there in Athens. And we will look forward to having you back here soon on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro.
Yep, as always, it's a pleasure, B.A.
Good stuff there from Connor Riley. A little bit of a different format for us, taking a guest a little earlier in the show than normal. A lot of that just simply related to the fact that that you're going to have, you know, Georgia players and Kirby Smart kind of getting going that press conference, and they'll be getting going the practice field. So stay close to Dog Nation here over the course of the next few weeks, and certainly all day today as spring practice gets up and running. I want to step away from spring practice here for a moment, if you don't mind, and go around the doghouse and follow up on a story that we talked about the other day, because I think we have a potentially interesting development here that if you're a sports fan, especially if you live kind of in the Atlanta area, Georgia fan who sort of lives in the Atlanta area, I think this could be pretty interesting. You know, one of the long-standing debates among a lot of lifelong Georgians is what the relationship is between the Atlanta Falcons, the NFL team here in Georgia, and the Georgia Bulldogs, the flagship sports team of all stripes here in our state. And there's been this assumption that somehow the Falcons don't like Georgia, somehow the Falcons don't want to embrace Georgia, and there have been lots of examples over the years in which it seemed like the Falcons were well-positioned to take a Georgia player in the draft and chose not to. And that's the one thing we've always said, that when it comes to this lingering deal, the people who want to just sort of write off and say, oh, there's nothing to this, I think they fail to consider the specific evidence where Falcons oftentimes have chosen wrong in the draft when the Georgia player was available. Go back to my childhood. Falcons drafted Steve Broussard, the running back out of, what, Washington State, instead of Rodney Hampton. Obviously, that proved to be a great error. Later on, a few years later, back in the 90s, you know, Falcons, you know, what, third round or so, draft Jamie German, a wide receiver from Miami, could have taken Hines Ward. Obviously, a grave mistake. You think back to just a few years ago, you know, you take a Vic Beasley instead of a Todd Gurley. And, you know, you sort of cite these examples on and on. Could have perhaps taken Jalen Carter, you know, what, last year and gotten the big impact that he could have perhaps provided. That a lot of opportunities to take the big-time Georgia player, Falcons just haven't done it. Now, I don't necessarily think they've done it on purpose, but I sort of understand why some Georgia fans have been wondering, well, you know, what exactly is going on with the Falcons here, and how come they're so slow at times to embrace UGA, especially given the fact that the original team owner, Rankin Smith, was a big-time Georgia guy, a prominent Georgia donor during his lifetime. You know, how come this current version of the Falcons just doesn't embrace Georgia quite as much as it perhaps could? But we said the other day on the show, there is some evidence here that perhaps things are starting to change, that maybe Atlanta is a little bit more willing to embrace Georgia. Maybe the Falcons do like the Dogs a little bit more than they used to. And the reason why we said that the other day on the show was because of something the Falcons coach, Raheem Morris, had said at the NFL Scouting Combine when asked about Georgia, had some very glowing things to say about Kirby Smart, some very glowing things to say about UGA overall. Just really impressed with what the flagship college program in the state where the Falcons plays, what it's been able to do. In fact, Raheem Morris, you know, would say as much as he's really envious of the level of success that Kirby Smart's been able to obtain. Let me let you hear this and then kind of follow up on new information on this topic. Here's Raheem Morris.
Jealousy is my relationship with Kirby Smart, right? Let's go win some championships like that guy. They've done nothing but formulate a great program. And again, it starts with the people, you know, some good faces back here, Jordan. Sorry, Jordan. But just watching him win championships, it's been fun to see. It's been fun to see the acquisition of great talent coming out of Georgia. I know where I live now is a big Georgia contingency. So, like, I got to get my Bulldog hats and be ready to support those guys and what they're doing.
So there you go. You've got Raheem Morris saying, hey, listen, I want to I want to support Georgia. I'm jealous of the success they had. I want to have championships the way they've had them. You know, a lot of very interesting things coming out of Raheem Morris's mouth. And so the other day on the show, he said, listen, maybe this represents, whether it was ever true or not, the Falcons were excluding Georgia players or perhaps not drafting enough of those. But whether that was ever true or not, perhaps we see a little bit of an example here of the Falcons wanting to embrace Georgia a little bit more. After all, there is an NFL team that's clearly done that, the Philadelphia Eagles. A lot of Georgia fans have kind of adopted the Eagles because of that. One of the other professional sports teams here in Atlanta, the Atlanta Braves, have sort of bent over backwards to embrace Georgia football, even though that's a completely different sport. They sort of understand the size of Dog Nation. They want to make sure they're, you know, in the sort of forefront of the minds of Dog Nation. The Braves have done a great job of that. We've said before, the Falcons could either copy either of those templates. Philadelphia, when it comes to acquiring Georgia talent, Braves, when it comes to making sure they're adjacent to Georgia fans, the Falcons could do either version of that. What we said the other day was, hey, Raheem Morris's statement, perhaps that's an example of the fact the Falcons do want to do just that. And we have more information today about the fact that, you know what, maybe there is a little something to this here right now. I thought it was very interesting to see the Falcons yesterday, in kind of the early days of free agency, have acquired another former Georgia player. Charlie Werner, of course, the former Georgia tight end, who's been playing a pretty pivotal role in the success that the San Francisco 49ers have had. Charlie Werner is now going to sign with the Atlanta Falcons. His former high school, Rabun County, celebrating this on X yesterday, saying that Charlie Werner has signed a deal with the Atlanta Falcons. Congratulations. And so not only does that make Rabun County folks happy, I think it should make UGA fans happy. We'll talk to Jake Fromm about this week. I know that Charlie's one of Jake's best friends, and I'm sure Charlie's thrilled to be coming back and playing, you know, football in his home state again for the Atlanta Falcons. That's a little bit of an example of that. But you may be aware of this there as well, that the biggest acquisition the Falcons made yesterday perhaps also has a little more tie to the state of Georgia than you perhaps realize. Kirk Cousins' wife is a Georgian. She went to UGA, and Kirk Cousins years ago had a chance to be on the field there at Sanford Stadium prior to game because of these family ties, I guess I would presume. And a lot of folks yesterday, including, we'll show you our buddy John Tweed Sports who put this out, Kirk Cousins getting his photo taken with Uga at a Georgia game years ago. Cousins shared that on Instagram there at the time. And the quote in the caption from Cousins was, "It was a lifelong goal of mine to pet Uga, and my dream was accomplished in 2015 when I met Uga 9. That's what Kirk Cousins said then, and now he is a part of the Atlanta Falcons. Not a former Georgia player, but someone who has familial ties to the University of Georgia and obviously enjoyed getting his picture taken with Uga. So all of a sudden here, the Atlanta Falcons, who a lot of Georgia fans have sort of felt like maybe over the years been a little slow to embrace UGA, maybe because of the stuff that Raheem Morris is saying and the fact that another former Georgia player has been signed via free agency, the fact that Kirk Cousins, the high-profile addition, he has a pretty significant Georgia tie here. Maybe there's some evidence right now there's a little more of this going on than you perhaps would have realized. Pretty fun and pretty interesting stuff as the Atlanta Falcons make some big moves, but also make some of those moves with a little bit more of a tie to UGA than perhaps you might realize.
Take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, so last night we had a chance to have a little meeting, a little get-together with some of the folks who were going to be on our Dog Nation cruise coming up. And, boy, stuff like that always makes it feel so real for me. And it was great to have Robin Washington with us. Robin is kind of our, you know, sort of liaison. Like, she works for Royal Caribbean. She's sort of our Royal Caribbean representative that we've always had the best relationship with. And Robin has always worked so hard to connect our people with Royal Caribbean and make sure, and I joked about this last night with the people that we were having a little bit of a, we had a little Zoom meeting. I was joking with them that, listen, going on a Royal Caribbean cruise with Robin Washington from Royal Caribbean is one of the great experiences you could ever have. And so it's great to hear Robin telling all the stuff that's going to be going on. There you see some of the stuff from our Dog Nation cruise a year ago. Boy, what a fun time that was. And I still laugh at my hair. My hair is a mess right there. It was very windy on the top of the ship there that night. But the point is, we had such a good time a year ago, and we're getting ready to do all of that again here in 2024. And we had a chance last night to talk about that with a lot of our folks. And having that conversation and talking about the fun things you're going to be able to do on board Allure of the Seas, it just gets me realizing that it's real. It's here. It's happening. And we get a chance to really start looking ahead to that. And I cannot wait to show this wonderful ship off with all the folks from Dog Nation who are going to be on this cruise experience with us. We're going to have more special, I think, Dog Nation events we've ever had before. But also it's a chance for people who maybe have never been on an Oasis-class ship to see the things about this ship that make it, you know, such a game-changing experience in the cruise world. I'm talking about the special neighborhoods, like the boardwalk neighborhood on the back of the ship. It's almost like being in Coney Island or something like that. You got the carousel, you got the doghouse, which you can go get like a brat or a hot dog or something like that. There's all kinds of fun restaurants there. But you've also got the Aqua Theater back there on that part of the ship, which is a really cool thing to see there as well. And see the high diving show and all the acrobatics that go along with that and kind of the sensory experience, the music and the lights and all that. Just an amazing array of entertainment. Also, if you're looking on video there, you see the Central Park, which is like being in a big city. It's almost feeling like you're walking around in land. It does not feel like you're on a ship. And you've got, you know, the Rising Tide Bar there, which kind of goes from one level of the ship and it sort of elevates itself like a almost like a theme park attraction, elevates itself to another level. And it's just such a fun thing to experience, the kind of thing you can sort of only experience on a Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. So we're looking forward to doing that on Allure of the Seas. And for you yourself, maybe you want the debut experience for Utopia of the Seas coming up in July, or you've heard me talk about Icon of the Seas and you want your own experience to be a part of that. Jessica Slater was also with us last night. She's a travel agent that can help you out with all of that. You can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. She's a great travel agent. She was specially selected for us by Royal Caribbean to get the most out of our Royal Caribbean cruise vacations. So Jessica's booked a great number for me. She's booked travel for Jeff and for Mike, a lot of the folks here in our Dog Nation team, and she can do that for you there too as you get going with Royal Caribbean here in 2024. All right, I want to go cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean here for a moment. And we were just talking about Carson Beck a moment ago. And for the most part, just about every national outlet has kind of called Beck the top returning quarterback in college football. We talked about this with ESPN the other day. There was the piece at CBS Sports written by Tom Fornelli the other day, and its first sort of power rankings of quarterbacks for the upcoming season. Carson Beck got the nod there as well, the number one quarterback here in college football. But the other thing that Fornelli included in his piece that I thought was interesting involves Alabama quarterback Jalen Milroe, who Tom Fornelli at CBS Sports had ranked number 10 on the list. Now, I want to read to you what Fornelli wrote about Milroe, one of the 10 best quarterbacks in college football, but perhaps someone not standing on quite as firm a footing as you might think. What Tom writes is, I won't lie, Milroe's hold on this spot is tenuous. He had a rough finish to the season against Michigan in the Rose Bowl college football playoff semifinal, and he's got a lot has changed since then. Nick Saban is out. Kalen DeBoer is in. An entirely new style of offense has emerged there in Tuscaloosa, including a transfer quarterback in Austin Mack, who is far more familiar, Fornelli writes, with the Kalen DeBoer playbook. Tom Fornelli goes on to say, I'm including Milroe in these rankings for what he did last season. But listen to this from Tom Fornelli. It would not shock me if he loses hold of the starting gig at some point in 2024. Now, isn't that interesting? Tom Fornelli, CBSSports.com, major national outlet, saying that Kalen DeBoer is a threat to replace Jalen Milroe at some point in time in the 2024 season as Alabama quarterback. Obviously, we've said this ourselves, and it's not our outright prediction that this will happen. It's just something. It's simply something we've discussed that could happen because it is a little bit of a tenuous grip that Milroe has had on that job. And it is a completely different offense here that Kalen DeBoer is going to bring in. Now, this is also one of those things, if you're Kalen DeBoer, you're going to be really, really careful with anybody who knows this, that if you're ever like a new manager in a company or sort of someone that like a new principal at a school or a new coach to a team, that if you're ever in a situation like that, the thing that you got to be really careful about is making too much change too soon or too much change and rocking the boat too quickly because people don't like change. And if you come in as a very aggressive agent of change, people who don't like change will then decide they don't like you. This sort of speaks to one of the challenges that Kalen DeBoer has. Obviously, he has to reinvent himself and reinvent the Alabama program sort of in his own image, but that's not going to be easy to do just given the fact that there's going to be a lot of doubt and skepticism around him because he's obviously not Nick Saban. So there's a very tricky needle to thread here for Kalen DeBoer. But there's also the issue is that when you look at Jalen Milroe, You know, I just think he has been made into something that I don't know if he's quite capable of living up to. And it's one of the things that will always frustrate me about the SEC championship game. This is not sour grapes, but I believe it's just a fair assessment of the situation that Georgia probably showed a little too much deference to Milroe in that game, showing too much respect to his running ability and giving him a chance to have an easier time throwing the football than perhaps he would, you know, justifiably, you know, ought to have, just given the fact that, you know, he's just probably not quite the player that I think that Georgia treated him as, you know, coming into that game. And obviously the subsequent game against Michigan sort of showed that. The Wolverines, much more successful in getting after Milroe, made him look much worse in the process than Georgia was able to do. So one way or another, this is relevant for UGA because Georgia plays Alabama September 28th. Now, if Milroe is he replaced by then? Ironically, that's about the time on the schedule that Nick Saban would, you know, I'm talking about, you know, early days of Saban in Alabama, kind of make his decision about a starting quarterback. You know, you think about, you know, years in which he sort of took his competition into the season. It's around that time of year, oftentimes, when Saban would sort of make his final choice. Is Kalen DeBoer going to travel a similar path here? Obviously, he knows the importance of that Georgia game. It's his first SEC game. It's at home. You want to be at your best at quarterback. What is the best for Alabama quarterback right now? Is a guy like Kalen DeBoer, who I should say a guy like Jalen Milroe, who ranks as one of the more famous players in the country, perhaps not quite the game to back that up? Or is a guy like Austin Mack, who has no experience, has no, you know, feeling what the SEC is like, but does have a lot more familiarity with the new look Alabama offense? Pretty fascinating, you know, sort of soap opera situation potentially playing out with quarterback there for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Yesterday, one of the things we talked about here on the show was ESPN's take on the season-defining game for Georgia. We talked about it being Georgia-Texas, and we sort of understand exactly why this is, for symbolic reasons just as much as tangible, that, you know, Texas was in the playoff a year ago. Georgia wasn't. Georgia going on the road to Austin for the first time in 66 years. It's the first time for Georgia and Texas to play as SEC foes. And it's not just on paper the two best teams in the league, the two teams that have the highest odds to win the conference, the highest over-under totals, things like that. It's also a situation where, you know, Texas brings the big brand. They bring the cachet that they've had a hard time often living up to. You know, last year they won the Big 12 in their final year in that league for the first time since 2009. That there was a mockery of Texas is back and the unmet expectations that last year Texas seemed like it was looking to sort of break out of the mold of and be a little bit more like the kind of program that Texas fans have sort of expected them to be. And so now folks there in Austin think that's just going to translate right to the SEC. They think they step into a very big league like the SEC, but as the biggest program in that league. As we talked to John Stinchcomb about yesterday, the flip side of that for the Georgia folks is they sort of think, a lot of the other SEC folks think, Texas is about to understand just how tough it is competing in the SEC. And so there's the symbolic value of, can the new look SEC team beat the sort of old guard SEC team? And that makes that Georgia-Texas game a very big deal. So from that standpoint, the fact that ESPN has highlighted that as the season-defining game for Georgia, we would completely agree with that. Now, I wanted to also look for a moment here, too, at some of the other season-defining games that are sort of mentioned for other SEC teams. And I think a couple of these are pretty fascinating. For instance, Ole Miss, a game that gets mentioned by Chris Lowe, is the Magnolia Bowl game against LSU. And I think there's a very sharp contrast at the moment between Ole Miss and LSU from the standpoint that Ole Miss is getting a lot of offseason conversation, and LSU is not getting quite as much. And part of the reason that Ole Miss has been sort of the darling of the offseason is, A, because they've been very aggressive in the transfer portal, and, B, they also don't have to play Alabama during the regular season. That's sort of thought to be a little bit of an easier path than perhaps they've had in the past, even with the addition of you know, Oklahoma and Texas, the league, that Ole Miss schedule makers probably did them a little bit of a favor here this year. But on the flip side of that, while they've gotten all the conversation, they're like, they're going to easily be a preseason top 10 team. LSU is perhaps right now not getting enough conversation. You know, we talked a year ago about what we thought Garrett Nussmeier could be. As it turns out, we were laughably wrong. We completely underrated Jaden Daniels, and we've been, you know, laughing at ourselves ever since then. But what we said about Nussmeier doesn't necessarily have to be wrong, even though we were completely wrong about Jaden Daniels, that maybe this is finally Nussmeier's chance to show the promise that we thought he had prior to last season. And while a lot of the transfers that LSU brought in prior to the 2023 season didn't quite work out, this has been a team that has seemingly gotten a lot more serious with coaching hires. You bring in a high-profile defensive coordinator from Missouri, a high-profile defensive line coach from Texas. You bring back Corey Raymond. That LSU knows it was bad defensively. And they've tried to use coaching hires as a way of getting better on that side of the ball for the offseason. So I think that ESPN's onto something here, that right now people probably aren't talking about LSU enough. When you think about that kind of classic rivalry game, Magnolia Bowl against Ole Miss, that could end up being one of the more interesting games in the SEC here this year. For Missouri, who ESPN ranks as its preseason number 7 team right now, they're mentioning a couple of games here. A game against Oklahoma on November 9th, but also prior to that, going on the road to Alabama. And you're talking about, you know, completely different reversal of fortunes. You know, in the past, the expectation would be that a team like Missouri couldn't even stay on the field with a team like Alabama. But this year, Missouri and Alabama are sort of thought to be in sort of a similar plane here right now, kind of fighting to be the best of what we sort of think of as the tier two in this league right now, behind both Georgia and Texas. If Missouri could win on the road at Alabama, there is no, I don't think, questioning this. You're talking about something that could end up being one of the most significant accomplishments in that program's history, and an example of a guy like Eli Drinkwitz, the coach for Missouri, taking that next step to be in a much more respected category as a coach than he's been before. I'll mention one more game here there as well. For LSU, ESPN sort of recognizes a season-defining game being that season opener against USC. That game's going to be fun because it's going to be played in Las Vegas. And Las Vegas has sort of talked about wanting to get more involved in sort of non-conference, neutral site, season kickoff games that Atlanta and Dallas and Charlotte have been doing for a good number of years. I think it'd be really fun to one day see Georgia open a season in Las Vegas like that. I'm sure Georgia fans would love making that trip. But for LSU fans, I think trips like this come with a little bit of anxiety because of the fact these are the games we've seen LSU lose a couple of times to Florida State. For instance, the neutral site game, the opening weekend of the season, they typically bounce back and play better, but they haven't in the Brian Kelly era had their business ready to be taken care of for the big, high-profile non-conference game. So everything we just said about LSU flying under the radar in the SEC and perhaps being a little bit more of a formidable force than they're currently being given credit for, the chance to prove that does come against USC, who as a program might be a little bit of a mess, but honestly, even if they are, at times we've seen LSU be pretty haphazard in these week one games, though whatever the issue is with USC post Caleb Williams, if LSU doesn't play any better in week one than it has the last couple of years, they might not be good enough to take advantage of that. So I do think it's fair to point out for LSU playing the neutral site, non-conference week one game, something they failed to win the last couple of years under Brian Kelly, getting that done against USC, that's pretty close to an imperative, I think you would say, for the Tigers here this year. We'll make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And while I have your attention, I'm going to also give a shout out here to our friends at Mr. Rooter, who offers so many things for you around your home from a plumbing standpoint. I'm talking about home water infiltration, drain cleaning, repair, water heaters. They can take care of your water heater if it's messed up, or so much more. They're just dedicated to addressing your plumbing needs as quickly as possible. That's residential, that's commercial, that's everything in between. You can rest assured that you can count on Mr. Rooter for upfront pricing, flexible service options, and of course, exceptional customer service. And the $29 service fee is waived anytime you get some repair work done. So that's why you want to visit the website today. It's MrRooterGeorgia.com. That's MrRooterGeorgia.com, and you can find your local Mr. Rooter. Today for our golden shoe, we got a little bit of help with all of this. This was shared with me by a very industrious person and involves one of our Dog Nation teammates here. How about Kaylee Manziel, her father Rusty, sharing this with me, taking all the way back to 2017 when Kaylee was crowned. How about Miss Pepperell? Now, we saw her the other day during our Dog Nation Oscars. She was kind of giving the Oscar wave with the kind of hand just sort of perfectly placed. I'm guessing her practice for that came when she was crowned Miss Pepperell, a dragon, back in 2017. Kaylee Manziel winning that there, her dad sharing that with us so we could have some fun at her expense. So we'll give Kaylee a golden shoe for bringing home the Miss Pepperell title way back in 2017. Good stuff there on all that. Lousy, stinking Gators. They don't have anything like that to celebrate. In fact, it's been 1,221 days since they beat Georgia. That's our Gator Hitter Updater. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Serve Pro.